Hey, Westside Marriage Conference 24. This is your bonus content. These are the questions that we weren't able to get to in our Q&A, and we wanted to do our best to try to answer all the questions. So if you're tuning into this and watching, you're going to hopefully get some answers that will be helpful to you. We'll do our best. There's some tough ones in here, but you know, marriage is tough, and sometimes there's hard questions. So we're just trusting the Lord will help us, lead us, guide us, and help you as well in your marriage. So first question that we didn't get to is, how do you respond to someone who only hears or takes what their spouse needs to work on and refuses to acknowledge what they themselves need to work on when you have already come to them with your need? So we kind of answered this a little bit from before, but basically it's very difficult for you to motivate, and nor should you even try to manipulate your partner to do their part. It's challenging. I would say, and Cody mentioned this in the meeting, it's like you take the opportunity to share what you need in the most kind way that you can, and then you take that to the Lord in prayer. Mm-hmm. And that the Lord is the only one that can change their heart. And also, you know, if this is coming from a husband and the wife's just not hearing his needs and just only focusing on what he has to do, and it's all your fault, the husband's feeling like it's all his fault, just do the things you know to do. Do the ones that are prompted in your heart that you just know you can do better, and start working on those, because your job is to be the best husband for your wife that you can be. And wives, your job is to be the best wife for your husband that you can be, and keeping proper order: God first, then your marriage, then your kids. And if you'll do that, God will honor that. So I would say focus mostly on not what you think your spouse got from the conference or is hearing from the Word of God. They keep reading the passages for the other and not their own. Don't worry about that. Just do what you know to do and bring it to the Lord in prayer. And I mean, bring it to the Lord in prayer every single day, not in a begging, nagging God way, but like, God, you know this situation. You keep working on my heart. I'm going to do the best I can within this marriage with my part, and I'm trusting you to do yours and working in my spouse. And God will do amazing things when you take that heart and that attitude.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, if you're bringing things to your spouse, asking for stuff, and then your spouse is bringing stuff to you, I would say also, you know, we were talking about, believe your spouse when they are making a request, when they say they have a need. So it can be frustrating to go, I'm trying to express what I need, and then he turns around and expresses what he needs. But really, you need to hear what he's saying and try
Or she.
Or she. I'm just using he because, yeah. But yeah, this goes both ways. But listen to what they're saying and try to hear what they're saying, even though, and hopefully, you know, they'll be able to hear what you're saying. But again, you take it to prayer, because when we do nag and we keep on and keep on and come on, then we're starting to damage the relationship in a different way.
Right.
So I think prayer is a good way, like you said, to do that.
Do your part.
But also, listen to what they're saying. Try to hear their need as well, even if it's bad timing on them expressing their need.
Right. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh. What do you... I'm sorry. How do you meet the man's needs when he is constantly telling you he doesn't care about things when you're trying to tell him what you need?
So I read that as you're trying to find out what he needs. You're trying to get him to express it. And your husband's like, I don't need anything. I'm good. I'm fine. Everything's good. And you're like, I'm trying to help you. You have needs. You're saying you don't have needs. What do I do? There's no communication. If your husband's in a place there where he's like, I don't have any needs, he's not acknowledging that he does, or he's totally unaware of them. So I would say in that case, I would fall back to the default needs of a man. Like we talked about it in conference. What are the top four things that a husband needs? And if he won't acknowledge them, start with there. Start those and just intentionally and purposely go after those and watch him probably start to come alive in a way that he probably didn't realize he needed. And, you know, I've been in that place too. We've had these conversations where she's asking me what you need, and I'm like, I'm good. I think I'm good. I don't need anything. And she's like, I need you to talk to me. And, you know, there were things that maybe I did need or want or whatever, but I just wasn't willing to put it out there for whatever reason, like rock the status quo. But if you're going to have an open conversation in a marriage that's like really communicates well, you're going to have to say the thing. So if he's not there yet, I would just start working on the majors.
Well, it reminds me, too, of kind of, you know, earlier on, really just a couple years ago, when we were working on me figuring out what I needed, but also not having conversations for you. So like, I would be like, I need this. What do you need? And he was like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, certainly you need something. And I think kind of what you were saying is, I can't answer for him. You can't force your spouse to have a need. And so I would say, stop having the conversation in your head too for him, going, well, certainly you need something. Like, his responsibility is to let me know what he needs. I can't guess. I can't force it out of him. So I just have to go, okay, he must be fine, and believe him. If he says he's fine, then I have to believe that he's fine. He doesn't have something else going on that he's not telling me, but just to leave it be. Does that make sense?
Yes, but then also do the four things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't just leave it be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. How do I speak truth to my wife lovingly? What are some examples that may seem okay, but are actually wrong? I think that you got to get to a place where you can say things. In a way that's not attacking, in a way that is soft and kind, for putting yourself in their shoes. So if there's something that you need to say and tell the truth about something and say something lovingly, speak the truth in love, you really got to come from a very humble place and just say, you know, I don't have it all figured out. There's just some things that I need to talk about it, and forgive me if I say I'm wrong, but I want to express something to us in our marriage and in our relationship that I think would be valuable and be beneficial to you, but I need you to hear me for the heart that it is. And then, you know, lay out it as kindly as you possibly can how you would delicately handle truth, especially if it's a touchy subject. And those subjects are wide and varied, but it can be family related, like her family or your family. It can be image related. You know, there's a lot of image conversations that happen that are touchy. I mean, there's just a lot of things, but you gotta handle it well. And can you think of an example of what may seem okay, but actually be wrong?
So the first thing that comes to my mind is your wife says, how does this make me look? And you go, you can't say, that makes you look fat. Like, that would be an example of—
It'd be true, but not
lovely. Not the right way to say it. So instead, you could say something like, it's not flattering on you. So that's a really, like,
it's not flattering. It's much better than that makes you look fat.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. Or answering with, can you return it? That's probably not. Yeah. That is, it's
being
not
gentle. I mean, really, it's being gentle and being loving and not being harsh in the truth that we're delivering. That's really what it comes down to.
Right. Okay. Go ahead. Can you?
Can you give us questions to talk about on the way home so it's not a full-out war?
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, we kind of missed on the way home part. But I think that you can, you know, I think, again, you take it one little baby step. Ask your spouse, you know, of everything that we heard, what is the one thing that you were like, I would love to see you work on? Because I think I like questions like that. I want to know directly, like, what is one thing that you saw that you're like, man, if my wife did that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, and maybe there's more than one, but start with one.
Yeah, I would start with one or two.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I think sometimes the first one could be sex. And that's a really, that's a big one. And that's something to really, really pay mind to. But also maybe what that second one is, so that it doesn't feel like it's just this big pressure to meet only a physical need. While it's important, right. I think it's nice to have maybe two things.
And then a question of what did you get personally? Like, what hit home for you that you know you want to work on personally?
Yeah. Because
that's encouraging to your spouse that you heard something that you felt hit home for you.
I totally agree. So, I think it's real easy to sit in those things and just assume that all I can see or all he's seeing is things that I need to do. But it's really affirming. It makes me feel better when I go, oh, he noticed something that he wants to work on. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think vice versa. You want to hear what I saw that I want to work on. I like it.
I'm going to fix this. This is driving me crazy. There we go.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Here's a tough one.
This is a long one.
I feel numb in my marriage. We don't speak. We don't have sex. There's not any real relationship. It's all very shallow level. I would My husband would say we're doing great aside from sex, but that's because I just don't try to talk him into it anymore.
Talk to him anymore.
Or talk to him anymore about anything. I feel a full burden of our current and future lives for ourselves. So you feel kind of alone raising of our children and their future selves. I'm not doing a good job as a mother because I'm constantly feeling so weighed down and alone. I'm doing the best I can to make sure my husband is still happy and comfortable, but feel no connection with him. So I'm definitely not doing my job as a wife either. How can I open myself up again when I'm still needing to be?
I don't know what that means. It says Jezebel for my Ahab. I don't understand that statement personally.
Which makes me bitter and lonely. So the Jezebel and Ahab reference is probably not something I would use. It's they're a biblical character that we're supposed to avoid. She was a sex goddess, and that's probably where you were going. But that's not really your responsibility to be a sex goddess for your king. It's a partnership, and men do need sex. It's in the top two. But you don't want to be in a place where you feel used and abused either. You're in this for a partnership. And so I think that, you're going to have a very real conversation about how you feel about things and what's going on and see how his response is to that. Because guys are really good at tuning out a lot. It's like almost DNA. I mean, it's just, we're good at tuning out things. And that's why we need a good wife to show us like, hey, this is not going well. The kids need more. I need more. And it's not going as good as you think. And we need to fix this. And Cody and I have had these conversations. We're like, she's like, I'm not good.
Yeah.
We're not good. And I'm like, what? I know we're maybe in a funk for a minute, but like, and she's like, no, it's more than that. And so this might be a situation where I would say having Christian outside help to talk to another couple you could trust or Christian counseling would be an excellent step, because there's some things that probably need to be said to your husband that he needs to hear from somebody other than you, and maybe a reality check. But you don't want to keep doing what you're doing, because it will produce what you said, bitterness and loneliness, and that's no way to live. It can be much better than that, and it can improve.
Yeah. Also, know that we have some counseling that we recommend. And if that was something that you were interested in, you could reach out to us and we can try to get you connected.
Facilitate that.
Yeah, facilitate that for sure. And I would say, too, we talked a little bit about this, but only God can meet our deepest needs. And it's important that we are spending time with him and really pressing into the Lord, especially in some of those times of loneliness, when we're dealing with our emotions. God needs to be our first step. And I'm not saying we can't simultaneously get outside help as well, but I would say also really press into him. Spend quiet time with him every day. Pray, worship, and find those things that you can be grateful for, because certainly there's something you can be grateful for. So there's some steps on your side too that you could do to just try to build yourself spiritually.
Yeah.
And to find things to appreciate. But go ahead and I think outside help can be a really good tool as well.
Yeah. And I would also say, find the scriptures where the word tells us to cast our care on the Lord. And you're not meant to carry that burden.
No. No.
You are responsible. God give you responsibility for our kids, but you don't carry the full burden of that. They're God's kids first. And so that doesn't mean you leave it be, but you cast the care of it to the Lord and trust him day to day to give you what you need to help minister to the kids, minister to your husband. But don't do it alone.
Don't do it alone. I think that's huge.
That's the answer. Don't do it alone.
Yeah.
Seek some help.
Good godly help.
This is something that happens a lot, and it absolutely can be turned around.
Absolutely.
But it may require some discipling and some help from the body of Christ, from Christians that will really care about you and your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. As a wife, how do I build trust and allow my husband to get something done when I believe it's not a timely manner in which when he wants to do it? I feel like he doesn't care when he lets that one thing last forever. In parentheses, big pile of chores. All right, so it sounds like you're asking your husband to help to do something, and
he's not getting on it.
He's
right away.
Saying okay, and
it's piling up.
Then not doing it.
Yeah.
How do you build trust? I don't know. What do you think about that one? We've had some of these conversations too.
Yeah, I think I think again it's another conversation, and you know, you can just explain to him how it makes you feel. You can talk about how it's affecting you and how it's affecting your peace and your sanity, so to speak. So it's, you know, it's something that it's like little by little. And so I think it's, again, it's back to communication. You know, you can say, listen, when we decide and you agree that you're going to do this and then it doesn't get done, it makes me feel like you don't care about it. And it's like, I really need help with some things because there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And when I hear you say this and you tell me that you will, then I'm trusting you that you will, but then it's not happening. And, you know, it's like, you can ask, like, I don't know what to do. When you tell me you'll do something, do I trust that you will? I mean, it's just open communication and mm-hmm. asking questions. And I think that those aren't easy things to say or to hear as a husband, a man, but really we want to be a men of integrity and earn the respect and the honor of the position of the husband has. But you know, there's also love covers a multitude of transgressions. And so I think there's a place for giving grace there, but also communicating. I wouldn't stay quiet and just, you know,
but I would
slog it out.
I would pick your time when you talk about these things wisely.
Not when the pile's right in front and everything's chaotic.
And yeah, and also you need to be able to keep control of your own emotions, because if you just blow up, you said you're going to do this and you didn't. I mean, that's automatically, you got to fight. So if you can
find a defensive.
If you can find a time. And again, the asking questions is huge. You know, do you remember when I asked you to do that thing? When do you think it'll be done? And then maybe we've opened a conversation where you can go, well, you know, I don't know, and da da da. And then just try to have a civil conversation. Well, I really need it done because this, this, and this. Right?
Right.
And so try to take the emotion out of it and to talk in a peaceable way.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you time it well, you can hit home when there's a moment where maybe he's requiring something or asking something of you, a need of his is needs to be met. And you can say, you know, I totally understand. I want to meet your needs. I want you to be fulfilled as a husband and as a man. But at the same time, I don't feel like I'm getting the same honor back to me when there's things that I really need done that make me feel fulfilled and honored in my role. And so you're neglecting me over here, but expecting me to fulfill your duties over here. And I'm struggling with doing that. And having that kind of conversation should put it in perspective. Yeah. It's like, he should come to this self-realization of, I'm demanding this and I'm not giving. You just got to find your place and your timing to fit that in, where it's not in the heat of the moment when you're upset and you want to explode on the list. So be careful. Be careful with that one.
Okay.
How do you go from a marriage of obligation to a marriage of love if that isn't a natural feeling for you? That's a good question. You want to start with this one? Want me to?
Go ahead.
My first thought in seeing obligation and love is one, marriage is both. When you're committed and you're in a covenant, you are obligated to your spouse. I mean, you've signed up for that. And love as a feeling is fickle for the whole time you're married. It's up and down. Emotions are up and down. The more time you spend in an attitude of gratitude and thinking about the positive of your spouse and thanking God for them and serving your spouse, like we talked about in the conference, you're going to find yourself feeling feelings again. And maybe feelings aren't natural for you, and maybe that's from childhood and different things, but feelings will come alive when we put the proper things in perspective. And you can get back there. You can get back to that place again, or to that place.
Well, and I also would ask, where are you getting your definition of love? You know, are we getting our definition of what love looks like from movies, from, you know, some image of love that has been put out to us? Or are we getting our definition of love from the Word of God? Because love is a choice. You know, we choose to love people. And of course, we want to have pleasant feelings toward one another. But if we're looking for a fairy tale, and this could be off topic, maybe that's not what you mean at all. But if we're looking for, you know, a fairy tale, then that might be a miss, you know. But should we like being around each other? Should we love each other? Should we have fun together? Absolutely. But sometimes, you know, it's not all fireworks and
finding the connection points, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Again, back to, are you doing anything together that you like to do? Are you doing anything with your husband that he likes to do? Is he joining you with something that you like to do?
Well, and again, this could go either way. Because it doesn't say if it's husband or wife, but
correct.
Vice versa.
Yeah. Same thing with a husband. If love isn't a natural feeling to you, you can get there by focusing your attention on the right things.
Yeah.
And those feelings, they will come alive again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have to stay in a marriage with a spouse who continues to have an I don't care attitude towards the things that were talked about? Do you have to stay in a marriage with a spouse that doesn't care, basically? You know, that's a hard question because we have made covenant. You know, when we get married, it's a God covenant. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's what we've signed up for. When we don't know all the things about the people that we marry, we think we know enough. When you're the younger you are, the more you think you know. The older you are, the more you realize you don't know. And
well, and I would say too, you know, you would even ask, you know, what else is going on that your spouse doesn't care? You know, what's happening behind the scenes? Are they having their needs met? Because no one, I don't think anybody goes, yeah, I'm perfectly happy. I'm perfectly okay to be in this marriage. That it's seemingly that they're not happy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if we're asking some of these questions, why is this happening? What's happening? You know, because it's not just surface level. It's not just, I don't care. There's something below the surface that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, I would do everything you can to stay and find a way to make it work. Again, outside help, facilitation, marriage, Christian counseling. Let's get to the root. Let's find out what it is. Let's see if he's willing. If he's willing to make an effort in any regard in keeping the marriage alive and together, I say you stay with that as long as possible. The Word of God says that, you know, even if you're dwelling with an unbeliever, if they're okay to stay with you, they're not put off by your faith or your religion, then stay. It doesn't actually say, that everything has to be good for you to stay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things are hard. And, love can be brought back to life in a lot of ways. And I think even in this case, your spouse can be won by the conduct of the other. Mm-hmm. And so I would do everything you can to kind of regenerate and rekindle those things and get your spouse to a place where that I don't care attitude becomes I do care about this person.
Yeah.
Because staying together is always better. If it can be worked out and they're both working together toward a common goal of making it good, that's mm-hmm. always better.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, people don't want to stay together. And that makes it more difficult. But I would travel the road a little bit farther and just see if that I don't care attitude can be turned around, maybe with somebody else speaking into their life, whether it's the wife or this husband speaking into their lives and asking them, you know, what about your marriage would make it good? And,
and
what are those things? Dream a little. Like, what would it look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's so many resources, and really for all these questions, there's so many resources online with videos and things. We really like the Marriage Today stuff with Jimmy Evans.
Yeah,
and there's lots of videos that maybe you find encouragement. Maybe you'll hear something and you go, I wonder if that's what we're dealing with here. And just getting ideas for how you can improve your marriage by studying marriage.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. All right.
Okay. What if I try to ask myself
my spouse
questions be their friend, and they say I'm wasting their time, and doing so, I'm disrespectful towards them. So it looks like you're trying to enter into your spouse's life, and they're telling you that you are wasting time and being disrespectful. That sounds really harsh. There's other stuff going on here. I think that, yeah, again, you probably need to try to pull somebody else in to the situation. Because if I'm saying, hey, I want to try to meet your needs, I want to try to help, and you're just going, this is disrespectful and you're wasting my time, that's a really aggressive response.
I feel like there's more to that question than what's really written down with that, and probably more pieces of the puzzle. But
I kind of feel like that with several of these questions.
Yeah, I think that again, you come back to this. You come back to this place of how can I serve my spouse? You know, is it maybe words and talking isn't how they feel served or their needs being met. Maybe it's somewhere else. It's gifts or it's quality time or it's acts of service. I would try some other avenues of how to serve them. So that they feel like the effort's being made, and they feel that sense of, hey, I care about you and I want to honor you and respect you and put you in the proper place in my life, the Lord first and then you second, and allow that to work for a while before you come back to this communication piece, and maybe it won't be taken in a way that they feel like they're being disrespected. Maybe they would actually see the act of that love being enacted, and then now the communication can happen.
Yeah. Trying to meet your spouse's need where, I mean, maybe they are communicating. There's a couple different things. These are so hard to answer sometimes because there's so much more context to what's happening. But maybe they have expressed another way they want to have their needs met. And maybe that's being
missed.
Yeah. And then also with some of these too, you know, I'm wondering what communication is like. Is communication in the home peaceful? Is communication in the home
tense?
Nice?
Hard.
Is it kind? Yeah. Are we constantly jabbing at each other with that again, being passive aggressive?
Or sarcasm or picking?
I mean, really, I think base level for so many of these things, we need to make sure that there's peace in our home and how we communicate.
Yeah.
So we need to take out sarcasm. We need to take out being passive aggressive.
Yeah.
We need to get rid of yelling. We need to, I mean, these are, I think, working on some of these base things of what is the communication like in our home and setting a better tone, I think can be a really good jumping off place.
Yeah.
Nobody specifically asked that, but that's something that kind of keeps coming back to my mind is really, what does the communication look like? Am I building up my spouse? Am I trying to encourage? Am I talking kindly? Or am I, as every word that comes out of my mouth, loaded with disdain and frustration?
Right.
I think when you get to a hard place in your marriage, that communication breaks down real fast.
I think that we got to be careful that we don't treat our spouses like we treated our siblings, kind of that picking and poking. But the Bible says, Proverbs says that a soft answer turns away wrath. So if you're the only person you're responsible to control your tone and your language and the way you express is you. And if you've never done that before and you've grown into a habit with your spouse of really getting after each other and yelling at each other and saying harsh things, the only person that's listening to this that's required to change that is you.
Yeah.
And you can't do that for your spouse. So you're going to have to find a way to start talking softly and gently and communicating quietly and let them diffuse. The Bible says that done consistently will diffuse wrath. It will diffuse that angered moment, that soft answer, that quiet spirit. And, you know, that may not be in you. That may be something that you haven't found in a long time, but because of God's being on the inside of you, that quiet, gentle answer is there.
Well, and remembering kind of this image of, you know, for me as a wife, if I'm communicating with him and talking to him as if he were Christ, you know, how would I respond? And again, you know, if you're getting an angry husband talking to you, okay, Jesus isn't going to talk to you that way. No, but that's not my part. My part is to try to remember that I'm to treat him as Christ, right? And I'm not going to be passive aggressive. I'm not going to be snarky with Jesus.
Right.
And so if I can try to keep that thought in my brain, it helps me to go, I would never talk to Christ this way, kind of thing. And then really kind of goes the other way too. If it's swapped and it's the husband dealing with the wife, you know, does Christ yell at the church? No,
right.
He doesn't yell at the church.
Yep.
So anyway.
Okay.
Keep going.
Purity outside the marriage versus purity within the marriage.
So purity outside of marriage, before you get married, I think it's pretty clear, you know, we're not to have sex. I would say we're not supposed to be naked together outside of marriage. So that's a really clear line,
yeah.
I think. And then obviously we're...
Save all that.
Pornography, there's never a place for that inside or outside of marriage, before or after marriage.
It's the enemy's tool. There's
nothing
godly about pornography at all.
Yep.
It's completely against God's ways and what he calls us to.
Yeah.
Calls us to righteousness and holiness. Be holy for I am holy. There's nothing about pornography, nothing about it that is okay in or out of marriage.
Right. And then purity within marriage, I think one of the biggest things is to remember, I've read some really good books about sex and purity. Oh man, do you remember what the names of them are? I remember one of them is, it's called The Good Girl's Guide to Great Sex. That's one.
I don't remember the other one.
Oh man, we can list them. But there's three really, really good books. But one of the things that I enjoyed when I read the one had to do with inside of marriage, like the things that we do together sexually, where did that idea come from? Did the idea come from something we've been exposed to in the past?
Right.
Did it come from pornography that we've seen in the past? Where did this idea come from? And I think that can be really, really telling about what is acceptable in the marriage bed and what is not. Because there are things that have a really bad root, you know?
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you want to, purity inside of the marriage, right? Paul said the marriage bed is undefiled. And, that means that in marriage, sex is okay. That's what Paul was saying. But then we have predominantly over that, we have this covenant and this command from the Lord, be holy for I'm holy. So if we're doing things in the marriage bed that are outside of, you know, what would be considered godly. And again, back, where did it come from?
Right.
Why are these things introduced in the marriage bed? Things that are worldly and ungodly that you mm-hmm. would find in pornography that are, mm-hmm. That would be considered gross,
yeah.
that would be considered evil, that would yep. be considered harsh, wicked, dominating, whatever you want to call it. It's important that we recognize what those are. And here's the deal. We're believers and we're Christians and we have God on the inside of us. That's in the Word of God. We became one with Him. So if we're open to what He's saying to us and we're doing something that bothers us on the inside, then it's not right.
Right. And if one person feels bothered,
you're both bothered.
It's a no.
Yeah, it's a no. It's you got to be on the same
page. That's not purity.
And together. You're not talking
right.
your spouse into doing something that they're completely uncomfortable with for a variety of reasons. And there's more to say on that subject because, you know, there's stories of women like, well, I'm not comfortable having intercourse. I don't feel like that's right. Well, that's how babies are made. Sorry. I mean, that's biblical. But then there's extremes to that too. If I'm not comfortable doing certain things, and you got to listen to that. So I think this is a conversation between you and your spouse. But even if the two of you together had been exposed to a lot of different sexual type things, and you're okay with a lot of different sexual type things together, I think maybe even as Christians or new Christians, maybe you're in that boat too, where you like rededicate your heart to the Lord. I think you need to reevaluate some of those things and ask the Lord, are we honoring you in this and
yeah.
our relationship together? And I think he'll check you if it's not, and you'll be okay if it is.
Yeah, this is something too that's touched on in the marriage groups that we just started with the book, The Brevere's.
Yeah.
And so this is something that's touched on, and I highly recommend joining one of those groups so that you can walk through that too with other people.
So if you're not married, purity is to abstain completely.
Yeah.
After you're married, the marriage bed is undefiled, and then back to all that advice we gave.
Yep.
And I think this applies too for some folks that have like been together for a long time and you know, they have kids together and they've never taken the plunge, so to speak, with marriage. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage you, marriage is a covenant of God. It's built and designed to be blessed and honored His way, not the world's way, His way. And there are steps and procedures that are prevalent for our society and for our situation in life where we're at in our country that deem and qualify marriage to be real and godly and a union. And it's not just that you live together and you have sex. That's not necessarily a message. That's part, or a marriage. That's part of it. But really, it's a commitment before God with somebody there that's holding you to your vows, holding you to your commitment with witnesses. And, you know, in our state, in our country, there's marriage licenses. And maybe you have an affinity to a bunch of those things. But I would say if we're following the laws of the land where we're at currently, you want to pursue and look at doing this God's way. And I would just encourage you, don't be afraid of that, because what God deemed good and blessed will be blessed. And all the things that are scary about you, or what you're scared about marriage, and maybe your past or your family or your parents or whatever, you're in a place now where you're following God first and you want to do it God's way. It's going to be different and better for you than maybe what you were modeled before, because you're willing to say, okay, God, I see this in the Word. I want covenant with my partner. I want to be married. I want to be fully committed, recognized by God and by the state. Mm-hmm. I think there's value in that, very much value in that covenant relationship. So chew on that a little bit. It's something to think about.
That's good. What do you do if you can't agree on 90% of the cause of arguments? Like literally when we will be like, wow, we can't even find middle ground. So we just figure it out when we cross the bridge. You know, if you're finding that you cannot agree on anything, I would say a couple things. One is that I think there's a lot of pride that might be involved in these arguments 100%. Where no one's willing to yield. Empathy, being able to see someone else's perspective, is a really big deal in conflict resolution. And so part of that would be to really check your own heart and see if you need to humble yourself. But also, you might need to bring somebody else in.
Mediator.
Yeah, and this can just be a friend that go, hey, you know, we just need somebody to talk this out with. So that's my quick answer.
Yeah, and you know, as believers, we go to the Word. So what does the Word say? I mean, these issues can be found. These discussions can be sought out in the Word. And you might need help finding mm-hmm. that. But if you can, as Christians, come to a place where like, okay, we're not agreeing on these things for a wide variety of reasons, and mm-hmm. mostly it's because of our background and what we've experienced, and we are not seeing things from the same perspective at all. We're on opposite sides of the street. What do we do? Maybe we go back to the Word and find out what God said so that we can each adjust our perspective and get back to a place, because you're never going to see everything eye to eye. It's almost impossible to say that's going to happen with the context of marriage. But you at least want to be shoulder to shoulder and at least be looking in the same direction. So I would say as Christians, you know, we're going to go to the Word and find out what God says about these issues. Mm-hmm. And then if you need help with that, that's something to ask about too.
Well, and the other thing too, go to, like I said, Marriage Today and look, watch videos together about communication. Like just Google search communication in marriage, Marriage Today, you'll find
it'll help you.
Several things, I'm sure.
What would you say to someone's wife who does not listen to husband's spiritual advice or biblical advice because she doesn't agree with it? But as soon as someone else or a pastor says it, oh, now you listen. Thank you in advance. Okay.
I think it's okay. I mean, in some regards, I would not be so frustrated when they're actually hearing it. Like, I know that he and I, we've dealt with some of this stuff, and it's okay that they're hearing some wisdom from other people. I think it's okay that they hear that. But I also hear the frustration of, why can't you just listen to me? I don't know. What do you think?
I would just say eventually he's going to get there, or she's going to get there listening to that advice. Eventually they're going to get there. I would say that if you're really seeking after the knowledge piece of it, like you really want the answer, you want them to have the advice, then it's more of a pride issue on who gets credit. Mm-hmm. And so if it really is about them just getting the information and handling and doing it, then you're okay with them hearing it from someone else. And this is going to happen your whole life with your spouse and with your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, we hear this all the time. We've said this together.
Like,
your kids will come home, I mean, especially your kids will come home, you'll never believe what I learned today. It's like, I taught you that 5 years
uh-huh.
ago.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you get to a place as a parent, it's like, that's awesome. I'm so glad.
Yep. I don't need
you
the
got
win.
That. I don't have to have the credit for it. You got it. That's good enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but keep, I
take
mean.
Take those when you get them, and then just understand it will get better.
Yeah, that's the goal. What is good church life balance?
What is good church life balance? Well, church isn't every day of the week. I would say you want to be in church as often as you can. I was raised in a culture where we were there 3-4 times a week.
So was I.
And you know, that's how it was, you know, 25 years ago.
But yeah, I mean, I was volunteering. I was doing all kinds of things, yeah. And I liked being there.
Yeah. So, you know, the world would say, you know, church is a hobby and you only give your hobby so much time. Church isn't a hobby for us. I mean, obviously we're pastoring, so it's a deal for us, but really church is what Jesus is building in the earth. He's building the church, and we are commissioned by the Great Commission to help Jesus build his church. And so I would say that each person is going to have a different conviction in that area, mm-hmm. because their ministry is going to be in different places, but everyone's called to be in church and be a part of the church, not just a spectator, but a participant. And so, you know, you're going to have to kind of navigate that with your own family, but I would say be in church, you know, our regular services are Sunday. Mm-hmm. I would say be in church as often as you possibly can and move other things around that. And that's not just for you, although it's super beneficial for you and for your spouse, but your kids are going to see that church is not an option. Mm-hmm. It's a priority. And we move things to make church work, not the other way around. And that will serve them well because they're going to need it in their families.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, something we talk about a lot, being in ministry, because it's important that our children also feel like a priority. So as far as if someone who was in ministry would ask this question, you know, our kids need to know that the church doesn't come before them by any means, but we do need to be in church every week, things like that. But again, when you're in ministry, it's a little bit a different situation.
Yeah, I mean, you want to have balance, but church is not something you're going to regret in eternity. When we step over there, we're not going to regret that I wish I wouldn't have gone to so many church services. Man, what we could have been at the lake more. You'll never say that. Yeah. So you can find a balance for your family. You can make it work, but it's really is varying degrees of call and ministry that's mm-hmm. on your life, and you know, maybe you're called in the marketplace more. And so you're at church, but you're also ministering outside of the walls, which is what we're supposed to do as Christians anyway. So it's kind of different for each family, but I would say Sunday to Sunday, you want to make it a priority every week as best you can. Mm-hmm. And then take vacations and take trips and mm-hmm. be away and get rest, come back, plug right back in. All right, next question. How do you find what your gifts are? And so we talked about this briefly, but maybe a comment made during the conference that we were trying to help each other discover their gifts and bring their best out of each other in the marriage and rely on your spouse's giftings and abilities where maybe you're weak and then vice versa. And to find out where your gifts are, you know, it's like what comes naturally to you? What are you good at? What are things that just kind of pop up out of you when crisis hits or when questions come up or decisions need to be made? What are the things that you think about, the things that you see? Are you good with reading people and understanding maybe the motives might not be good there, we need to wait and see? Or are you good with maybe prayer, that piece of it? But really finding out what your gifts are is kind of just initially identifying what are you good at, what comes naturally. And then in the church, that's how we identify gifts, is when you're serving, you're in teams, you're working together, there's giftings that'll come out of you that are just in you because of what God's put inside of you. And those can be identified by people around you as well.
Yeah, I think finding your gifts, really simply put, in a couple different ways. One is that, you know, what is that thing that tugs at your heart? What is that thing that you always go to? Or you're like, man, that person's struggling, I want to pray for them. Or, oh, I see this thing that's disorganized and I really want to go organize it. You know, what are your natural, you know, pulls and tendencies as a way to find your gifts? But also kind of within the church body, serving different places. If you're unsure what your gift is, I would say shadow all the departments and see, because we've got places for admin, we've got places for organization, we've got places for, you know, working with people, working with children, working with sound and technology. There's lots of places that just shadowing and seeing what's out there and then seeing what lights you up, seeing what interests you, I think is a really good way to find two different ways you could find those interests.
Yeah.
Those gifts, sorry, gifts.
How can you lead without being controlling? You know, leadership is defined typically by who's following you. So, you know, if you're out, the, if you're leading, if you think you're leading people and you turn around and nobody's following you, you're really just out for a walk. So, leadership is being, I'm trying to find the word, but basically you're so confident in what you feel like you should do that you're persuasive enough to gather the troops, so to speak.
Well, and I think you make opportunity
to
lead. You know, sometimes, like I heard this example of a husband wanted to lead his wife as and wanted her to go to church. And so she was not coming to church. And so every day every Sunday he'd get up and go, "Hey, I'm going to church. We're going to leave in 5 minutes. I'll see you in the car."
Well, he wasn't giving her 5 minutes.
But right.
But told her the night before. We're going to church. We're going to leave at nine.
Yep. And
he, 5 minutes out.
And he's trying to lead there, but he can't force that.
Right.
So I think you just keep leading, like you were saying.
Yeah.
But the person has to choose to follow.
Yeah. So it is.
You make opportunity.
Be persuasive. You can be persuasive without controlling. You can lay out your arguments. But again, you're not responsible for people's. The following part, just be persuasive, be somebody that somebody wants to follow, be a leader that someone wants to follow. And that comes back to service. How are you serving your spouse?
Okay. How can wives submit to their husbands without feeling like their opinions don't matter as much? You know, I think about some of our early marriage stuff where we were figuring out kind of our roles and what to do. And I remember kind of like letting my opinion be made known and then going, but you have the last say. And there was a couple times where things went askew, right? And I had to then not rub his face in it or nose in it, but just to be like, okay. So I think sometimes we just have to be okay with allowing our spouse to lead and really pray that they start to see the value in being in agreement on stuff.
Right. I had to learn that I'm in a marriage where my wife can hear from the Lord too, from God, and that I needed to value that and listen to that and not be necessarily bullheaded about it. And there were some things that could have gone way, way better that didn't, because she picked up something really from the spirit and in her spirit that was off, and she couldn't articulate why to me. And so then I wrote it off.
Yeah.
And I learned that it doesn't matter what the why is, she's still hearing. Yeah. And so I had to learn that by experience, unfortunately.
Well, I had to learn how to communicate that and not just go on. I'm going to shut up.
But I did.
Because there's a balance in there.
I didn't value her opinion on lots of things because she doesn't have all the information. She doesn't know everything that I know. She's just, you know, telling me what she feels. Well, her feelings matter. And it wasn't just feelings. It wasn't just an emotional. It was she was getting something on the inside that I should have listened to. And so you can give your opinion and you can still submit to your husband. Even if you don't feel like your opinion's valued, and pray, Lord, help them to see that I'm not trying to be domineering, but Lord, I really want to be a blessing to this family and be a part of this commitment, this union, so that I'm contributing to this in a way that's beneficial for the whole family. And pray for him that he'll see that, because eventually he will.
Yeah, and I think that's our thing, making sure that we're both, our goal is to be led by the Spirit. And if you both can get on that page of, we want to be led by what the Lord wants, not about what I feel, you know, or think, but really what God wants. And that's a great place to be, is try to be in line. Yeah.
Just trust that the words that you're saying are getting in, even though they don't seem to be valued at the moment. I think you still keep giving the advice, the stuff that you're getting on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Got married before becoming believers. Do we still have God's stamp of approval on our marriage? The answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people got saved after they got married. Lots. It happens all the time. Thank God for that. Your marriage is absolutely valid. I think there's something to be said as a believer, where if you feel prompted to, that you could even have a vow renewal, you know, as a godly, like, we're gonna honor God in this. And before it was just a church thing we did, or just a justice of the peace or whatever. But now, because we see things differently from a God standpoint and a biblical worldview, maybe we come back together again and renew that in a God fashion, where we really put God at the center of our marriage. But you have to understand that God causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, is what the word says. And that means that even the unjust, even people that are not serving God, can actually benefit from godly principles, even though God isn't the center of what they're doing. And there's giving principles, there's loving your neighbor as yourself principles, there's honoring your father and mother principles, even people before they were saved were serving God. There's principles that are spiritual, that are God laid out, that the benefits of those things fall on the just and the unjust. So having a marriage that's even pre-Jesus for you guys, God still honors that covenant, that commitment. It's still a marriage. But, you know, again, you might want to consider in the future at some point just putting God at the center of that and maybe doing a vow renewal. Simple, but putting God first place, maybe when you didn't before.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Nope. It's good. Is 13 times a month off the table?
So that's definitely a sex question.
Short
because
answer.
Cody gave the example of 3 to 12
yeah.
times a month and find some compromise. So clearly someone said that's not quite enough. It's 13 off the table. Absolutely, 13 is not off the table.
Not off the table.
Yeah, it's very much available. So you can, yeah, on the table, right?
I am.
I would say definitely, you know, whatever you guys come to agreement, it's there's no limit here.
So, yeah.
Yeah. My wife and I have very different personalities and spiritual lives and needs. My wife is not interested in praying together one-on-one. She says that it's just not her thing or aligns with her personally. I do lead prayer at dinner, and when we do our one-on-one weekly meeting, it was becoming a big place of contention for us in our marriage. I have to let go of my need and expectation of us praying together, meaning I took it to the cross. Sacrifice my own need and my expectation of her. I would love to have my wife pray for me. How do I honor my wife, her personally, while still encouraging prayer in our relationship? There's a lot of people and couples that are in different places here, just like you are, different spiritual lives and personalities. I would say keep praying for your wife and ask her. Maybe she doesn't want to pray. Maybe she doesn't want to be a part of the prayer part of it, or she doesn't want to pray out loud. But I would probably ask her, hey, would it be okay if I just prayed for you real quick? Just pray over her mm-hmm. with her in earshot. And that absolutely is a godly thing to do. And she may or may not want it. She may let you once in a while or all the time or one, you know, half the time. I think you just kind of keep pursuing that. Just say, hey, I value this and I want to pray over you in our marriage real quick, and just keep it short. You know, you don't have to drag it out, but I think you stay with that. You keep leading at the dinner table. You keep leading in your weekly meetings with the family. I think you keep doing that. And just keep believing and praying for your wife that she'll come to a place where she sees the value in it as well. But you're still honoring your wife.
Yeah.
Even if she says, don't pray for me. I mean, she can't keep you from praying for her. She can keep you from praying for her right in front of her. You know, she can be irritated by that, but she can't keep you from praying for her. And I think you stay with that because prayer does more than you could possibly imagine behind the scenes.
Yeah, and it sounds like that maybe she does pray. She's just not comfortable praying together. And so, you know.
It says that that's just not her thing. Different spiritual lives. It doesn't sound like there's much prayer going on there at all.
Okay.
Yeah. I say you just stay committed to it. You're honoring her by praying for her. And if she doesn't want you to pray in front of her for whatever reason, there's definitely some oppression happening there. There's definitely some things happening in her life where she's rejecting that side or the God side of it. And if she's not saved or she's marginal in that regard, you're not even sure, I think you start praying kind of the prayer that we pray over people that are unbelievers, that Ephesians 1 prayer, that God would open the eyes of her understanding and bring light into her life, that she would know what is the hope of her calling, and that she would have a spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of God. And you just start praying that over her, and that the blinders would fall from her eyes, because the enemy, you know, we talked about this marriage conference, mm-hmm. that the enemy blinds people from seeing the truth. And maybe she's in a place where she just doesn't see the value of it. And you can start praying that direction for her to get her to a place where she's opening her heart to the Lord.
I like it. All right, last question. How do I deal with my spouse when they don't pick up after themselves and now the kids are starting to follow this habit and leave things everywhere? I mean, your spouse, you cannot force your spouse to clean up. You can encourage them. You can try to communicate that need to them. But I think you can still train your children how to be tidy and using different strategies to do that, like what do you notice? Do you see anything that needs to be picked up? Do you see,
ask
you know,
them questions. Yeah.
Ask them questions, because I think sometimes it is a skill that has to be taught.
Yeah.
How to clean up, how to keep things tidy, what it looks like to clean well. It's a skill that's taught. So yeah. I think a lot of times, you know, instead of it being this place of tension, try to keep the peace and go, okay, what do you see? What needs to be picked up? Okay, pick up. I mean, and really just it goes into parenting and training your children to pick up, and then having, you know, those occasional conversations where it's like, maybe you're able to communicate to your spouse the need to lead the family also in that way.
Yeah. And I think the younger the kids are, the more you have to walk them through it, which I learned, you know, when they're 6, 7, 8 years old, they don't really have the capacity to make the same kind of decisions. It's just too daunting and overwhelming, and they need some help with that. And that's really his training, is just mm-hmm. maybe not necessarily doing it for them, but with them, or at least sitting in there and kind of directing traffic. But they learn how to do things, and that it doesn't take forever, and that they won't die in the process. Mm-hmm. And age out, you know, they will make it. So, and then the older they get, we've seen this with our teens, that even though they may not keep their rooms up like we would like, they're very capable of getting it ship shape, because we've taught them early on what yeah. it looks like and how to get it done. So you got to walk them through that. You can't, like she said, you can't make your spouse clean up after themselves. You can ask, you can, you know, you can pray, you can encourage, but ultimately, you know, you gotta either help and do it yourself and step in there if you really need it, or yeah. Just kind of learn to live with certain things. I mean, there's worse things in the world yeah. That your spouse could be doing. So I think you just navigate it the best that you can, and then train the kids so they know what it's supposed to look like, so they know how to do it when they're grown.
Yeah, and really, I'm sorry to say, you know, I'm assuming that some of these kids are younger just because they're starting to follow the habit. It lasts forever, the training kids to clean up, it feels like.
It does take a long time.
Unless
it's consistency.
Unless you've got a certain personality.
A certain tidy kid, yeah.
But I think most children, it is, you know, and it's so funny because our kids seem surprised every time I ask them to, that we need to tell them we need to clean up. It's just a big surprise every time.
What?
And they're older, but yeah. It's worth it. It's worth it to help train your kids into doing that.
When they go other places now, the comments that come back are, man, your kids are so tidy, they help clean up. And I'm like,
what? They volunteered to tidy your kids' room?
Kids?
What?
Okay. But they know how to do it, and that's encouraging to us.
Yeah. So.
That's it. I hope that helped. We sure enjoyed being with you guys over the weekend in marriage conference, and we're here for you. You need more help. You need encouragement. You need some advice on outside counsel,
yep.
and we're here to help you. So reach out to us, and
yes.
we'll do everything that we can to help you in what you're walking out with the Lord in your marriage.
Yep. Marriage is important. It's worth the effort and the hard work, and humbling ourselves to serve others, but also humbling ourselves to invite people in to walk alongside us.
Yep.
It's worth it.
And putting the Lord first, number one.
Amen.
So, love you guys.
It's good.